You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ryan Strome has 18 goals on the season now. He was traded by the Oilers to the Rangers for Ryan Spooner back in November. I think both Ryans each had one goal on the season before they made that trade. And Maddie, I mean, that's the best of any player acquired by a team this year, isn't it?
It is. Strome. And at the time, we thought it was a bad trade. Now it looks even worse. Because the dollar figure wasn't astronomical for Ryan Strome, $3.1 million. They convinced the Rangers to pay $900,000 of Spooner's $4 million contract for this year and next. So it's a wash in terms of the dollars, but certainly not in terms of the talent. And now not only did they trade Strome for Spooner, who didn't pan out, but now they still need a third-line center next year. If you say that Draisaitl's playing with Connor McDavid, as he should, and Nugent Hopkins is the second line center, you have to find a third line center. And not to slag Colby Cave or Kyle Brodziak, but they're fourth line centers. You need a third line center, which is one more thing on their checklist this summer that they have to find. And there's so many things on their checklist that to say... that if they get a new general manager, they get a new coach, that'll turn things around. I'm not so sure. They need half a dozen pieces this summer.
You know, I'm Craig Ellingson. I'm with Jim Matheson, Hockey Hall of Fame writer. This is the Oil Spills podcast for April 2nd, 2019. And as we sit here, we're recording this on the Monday. And the Oilers are playing Las Vegas on Monday night. Then they go to Colorado to play the Avalanche on Tuesday. But, you know, the Oilers are, for all intents and purposes, done. Mathematically, I think they just have to lose tonight's game against Vegas and they're done. And of course, they're chasing the Avalanche, who sit in the last wildcard spot with four games to go for almost every team. And we're talking about the Ryan Strome thing because, you know, that was a deal that obviously Peter Chiarelli made for Ryan Spooner, you know, a former Bruin. And of course, Peter Chiarelli is no longer the Oilers' general manager. Fired in January, and high, if not top of the list for anything we talk about with the Edmonton Oilers, is who is going to be hired as the next general manager. Now, it has been a couple of months, more than 2 months now, since the firing. And we all know that the process is going to take a while. That's what the Oilers have said. That's what Bob Nicholson, the CEO, charged with looking for the replacements, you know, general manager and whatever other staff, I mean, obviously head coach, is up in the air as well. We don't know what the future of Ken Hitchcock behind the bench is. We've talked a lot about it already, about who the Oilers could target and bring in. And Kelly McCrimmon, the assistant general manager in Las Vegas, is, you know, for all intents and purposes, probably the person most people think the Oilers should hire. But there's always debate as to whether, you know, what direction the Oilers should go. Like, Maddie, we were talking, and we've talked about it a lot of times before, but Kelly McCrimmon's, he's 58 years old. He's not a young scrappy, up and coming dude.
He's been around the game for a while. Playing, you know, he's not a Bill Guerin or a Tommy Fitzgerald or a Norm McIver. They may be older than I think they are, but they're not 58. So you're right. If I'm the Vegas Golden Knights and the owners are looking at him, and Seattle would be looking at him as general manager, I don't even let him get out of Vegas. If you think he's that valuable, name him general manager of your team. You know, George McPhee could easily step into the Brendan Shanahan role where he's, you know, he's got that title anyway. I think he's general manager and president of hockey operations, but make it a little more, you know, a few more things in his portfolio, I guess, you know, in terms of Shanahan as to what he's got in Toronto with Kyle Dubas. So you're right. I would just keep the guy they got, Keith Gretzky. And I know there's lots of people say you can't keep the guy because he's got that Gretzky name, and I don't think it makes any difference. I think he's very sure of himself, and nobody... It's nice to say you've got all these players, all these, you know, general manager candidates, and we'll talk to them and they'll tell us all about their team. Nobody knows the Oilers team better than Keith Gretzky. So if you want to make a trade, say, at the draft, when most of the trades are made to help things out, is a new general manager coming in on the 1st of June going to know the Oilers as well as Keith Gretzky? I don't see it. So... And obviously, you know, it's not just signing players for next year for the Oilers. You have to trade some of these players and try to get better players. So Gretzky would know them best. I would have no trouble with a Keith Gretzky general manager and a Ken Holland president of hockey operations if Ken wanted to leave Detroit and if Steve Yzerman got the GM job there. So I wouldn't have any problem with that whatsoever. Now, I don't know what the Oilers are thinking, but from the sounds of things, every name you can toss out there, if you cover hockey, would probably be a possible candidate for this job. And there's assistant general managers, there's guys who were general managers who are out of work now looking for the job. So it's a very long list.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, I mean, I brought up McCrimmon's age, but, you know, in my opinion...
He's pretty young compared to me. Well, not you.
Well, you know... I don't think it matters how old you are.
No.
I don't care if you're 58 or 28. If you
Lou Lamoriello is a general manager.
Well, I was going to bring that
in
up.
In Long Island, he's over 70. So
he certainly made a difference there, didn't he, this year?
Yeah, I don't think it makes any difference whatsoever.
Absolutely
and
not.
There is this feeling that if you work for another team that's a better team than the Oilers, then you're a hot item. Not necessarily. I mean, you'd have to do a deep dive on exactly how influential you are on that better team. Do they listen to you as an assistant GM? What do? Do you just look after their farm team? Or are you sitting in all the meetings when they're making trades and such like that? I would say if you don't have a background in amateur scouting, pro scouting, and contracts, I think it's difficult to suddenly come in, and analytics, I would suggest to come in and say, okay, now I'm going to run the store. It's very difficult. So, you know, there's lots of good candidates out there. And I think they got a very good candidate here already in Keith Gretzky. But I don't even know if he'll get an interview. This is his interview. He's run the team. This is it now. He's run the team, you know, since Peter got fired. So it's a couple of months. He's very, like I said, he's very sure of himself. He knows who can play and who can't play. He knows where guys fit on this current roster. And if he knows a guy is a fourth line player, he knows a guy is a third line player. He knows that maybe a guy had a career year this year, but you know, how much is he going to give Alex Chiasson in a deal? You know, he knows that better than anybody they're going to bring in. So. But that's just a personal opinion, and I'm not the one hiring.
Well, you brought up president of hockey operations. Maybe that's what the Oilers should be targeting first. I don't know. I mean, we don't have a very...
I mean, it is a
copycat. The time frame is very short here.
It's a copycat league, of course, the way it works. And it works that way in management, too. And the teams that have been reasonably successful at cleaning house, I guess, is the term, suddenly get a major domo like a Brendan Shanahan, and then a general manager who handles the day-to-day stuff. And in terms of the Oilers, I guess they could get a president of hockey operations. As it is now, Bob Nicholson's wearing two hats. He's the president of Oiler Entertainment Group, and plus he's trying to hire a general manager, which is the hockey end of things. And so he's trying to serve, you know, do two jobs at once. And I'm sure that's, you know, he's not getting a lot of sleep, I'm sure. I don't know how many times Daryl Cates is phoning him, but...
every day.
Probably every day, and he's not liking the fact there's no playoff games for a second straight year.
No, no, I guess not. But, you know, because, you know, then I know whether it's you or other people, I can't keep track sometimes, but, you know, the name Ken Holland keeps coming up. I know you've written about it a few times. I mean, you know, if he's sprung loose from Detroit, and that's, you know, sounds like it's likely, would you want him to come in to be your president of hockey operations? Is that the guy you want to bring in to do that sort of thing?
Well, in terms of history, and his resume is certainly impeccable.
Partly.
He has worked for Hockey Canada, but he's also won four Stanley Cups as general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. Would it be any different than Glenn Sather going to the Rangers as the general manager for quite some time and then suddenly saying, okay, now you're the president? And Jeff Gorton's the general manager, a younger Jeff Gorton. And, you know, Glenn was a general manager, but Glenn still kind of runs the hockey end of things.
It's like Harry Sinden in Boston, yeah. Too, right?
So, yeah, if it was Ken Holland, I would have no problem with that as long as they kept Keith Gretzky. But, you know, who's, like I said, you can't bring in anybody and say you have to keep this person. I don't think you should. So if you want to hire a new general manager and not say give it to Keith Gretzky, is that new general manager, you know, are his hands tied as to who he wants to be his right-hand man? Should it be Keith Gretzky? If the order higher-ups are right, he should probably stay with the organization. He's running the draft. We've already been told that he's running the draft. But, you know, it's like Ken Hall, it's like Ken Hitchcock, its coach. The new general manager might look at it and say, you know what? We need a younger guy to coach this team. We don't need Ken Hitchcock. So there's so many balls in the air as to who you hire and who he has to keep on the staff and who's making those decisions. Bob Nicholson, Kevin Lowe, who's being told that, yeah, you have to keep this guy.
Yeah, well, as we all know, Kevin Lowe doesn't make hockey decisions anymore. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that.
And I don't even know, like, we have no idea if it's just Bob Nicholson hiring this general manager, who's helping him? Are they going to go to a headhunter? Is the headhunter going to interview all these people and then come down to six names? And then Bob Nicholson's going to hire him? I don't know how this is going to work.
A headhunter?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Is that like
not Dave Hunter? And not Dave Hunter, or Mark Hunter? Yeah, a headhunter.
Dale Hunter's around.
Yeah, a headhunter can interview Mark Hunter. Yes. So
goodness.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. It's
call all better manpower or whatever the sperm is that does those things.
Yeah, there's. It's. You know, theoretically, your general manager is the most important guy in your team. It isn't on this Edmonton Oilers. It's Connor McDavid. But on most teams, your general manager is your most important hire and your most important person because he's running the store. So we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know that, you know, here it's beginning of April. The draft is less than 3 months away. I mean, you know.
I think you need a general manager by the 1st of June. Mm-hmm. Now, if Vegas is still playing, then they're not talking to Kelly McCrimmon until Vegas is done. So that's, you know, the 7th, I think, might be the last day of the season. There's between the 7th and the 10th or something. So makes it difficult to wait that long, especially if you have a couple of other people you like that you've already interviewed 3-4 weeks ahead of this, and then you're waiting around for one guy. I don't think you can hire. You can't go into the draft and say, oh, by the way, this is our general manager, and you know, a couple of weeks before the draft, and he's introducing himself to the scouting staff and whoever else is working for the Oilers. Well, I think the need for a goalie now is more paramount. The need for a backup goalie now brings Shane Starrett into the picture, because no matter how well Shane Starrett is playing for Bakersfield, because Koskinen has not played well enough, I don't think they can go into next year with Shane Starrett as a backup. They have to get somebody who has played, you know, 100, 150 NHL games as a backup. And that backup, I think, has to have the ability to play between 25 and 30 games until Koskinen proves he can play 60. And, you know, he has had some good games since Cam Talbot left. I think the high watermark for Koskinen was after Cam played all those games at the beginning of the year, then all of a sudden Koskinen started playing, and he played all those tremendous games, especially at home, and won, you know, was giving up one goal a game. And since Cam's left, he's played some good games, but his good games are good, not great. His bad games are bad. I'm getting hooked bad. Four times he's been hooked in last 15 games. Part of it sometimes is the team, like in Toronto, we got the hook and the team was terrible that game, as I recall. But that's a lot of times to be hooked if you're the starting goaltender. And it's not like they're going to Cam Talbot as the backup. You know, they've got Stallers as the backup. So he has to be considerably better. He says he's not tired. He's played 52 games. His career high is 56 as a pro in the KHL a couple of years ago, including playoffs. So he's getting to that point where he's played a lot of games, and they don't see anywhere near the shots in the KHL as they do in the NHL. So he's seeing more shots from from tougher spots on the ice. And I don't know how you improve his glove hand unless you tell him, as we've joked, he's got to sign up for several, you know, slow pitch or fast pitch ball teams this summer and learn how to catch. So, but he's a funny goalie. He's a big goalie, and you see some big goalies, they just let the puck hit them because they're so big. He's pretty active in the net. And I think, you know, Dustin Schwartz, the goalie coach, has to work with him and get him to quiet his game down a little bit and let the pucks hit him.
I mean, in my mind, there's three options when it comes to who else is going to be the Oilers' netminder. Of course, there is Shane Starrett, and he's 25 this year. He's not like he's just a new kid, just drafted a couple of years ago. He's been playing in the minors and seasoning. I mean, at some point, he's going to have to get a shot. Maybe it'll come because of injury. It's usually how these things go, or at least he plays so lights out that you can't help but bring him up and see how he does. But, you know, we talked about the free agent goalie pool for July 1. It's fairly, you know, middling. There's no, outside of Sergei Bobrovsky, and the Oilers aren't going to be signing a guy like that because they can't afford it. You know, you're just getting more of the same, whether you'd held on to Cam Talbot or not, or whether you're signing a Peter Mrazek, et cetera, Cam Ward. I don't know if he's available, but they're all essentially the same thing. They're not coming in here expected to be your bona fide number one guy. They're going to be pushing Koskinen. I mean, maybe you get lucky and they have a great year. But what would the harm be? And I mean, would Cam Talbot, you know, you could bring him back. What kind of goodwill would that be?
I think that would be a slap in the face at Cam Talbot.
Sure it would.
You traded him. You didn't think he was the starter. Mm-hmm. You traded him to get rid of his money. You went to Philadelphia, and then you said, oh, we looked around. We can't find anybody better. You want to come back?
Sure.
Well, he's not coming back for four. He's coming back for two. And now I don't know what he's going to get in Philadelphia if they sign him again. If they sign him, Brian Elliott's available as well. But there's other teams might go for Brian Elliott. So you're right. You do come down to the same sort of people as the backups. Career backups is what you're getting. Whether that's a Mrazek, who sort of was a starter in Detroit but couldn't beat out Jimmy Howard, or Curtis McElhinney, who's been a career backup his entire life. That's the sort of goalie you're going to get. But they've also played a fair number of NHL games. And Sterrett, to me, is Laurent Bossois. We think he can be a backup in the NHL, but we're not sure. And, you know, he plays every fourth, fifth game. So I think they need somebody next year who's going to push Koskinen a little bit. And if his game starts to slide, you don't stick with him. You go to somebody else for a while. And, you know, and that's unfortunate for Shane Sterrett, because I think they got to re-sign him too. His contract's up. But they got to find a better backup than Al Montoya, who they brought in, you know, and thought that he was better than Laurent Bossois, and Al wasn't, and then had concussion issues and stuff. And is in the minors, and he's had vertigo problems and isn't playing. So they have to find a backup better than him, I think, next year, because I don't think Koskinen's proven he can be, you know, a 60-game goaltender.
The Canadian Women's Hockey League is folding. You know, they had a few teams. Calgary had a team, Montreal, Toronto, et cetera, et cetera. It came as a bit of a surprise. You know, women's hockey has got stature in Canada. If Team Canada, the Canadian women's team is playing at Rogers Place, I think the last time they played an exhibition was before the Olympics last year, and they sold it out. So, you know, it's women's hockey has been gaining fans. And, you know, the pro game, we don't have a team in Edmonton, but, you know, to see it fold, it is sad, but I like to think that there's a future for women's professional hockey somehow, some way, in a different form. Or Maddie, there has to be a partnership with the NHL if it wants to actually grow deep roots.
Instead of giving it lip service that we really like women's hockey, we'll jump in then and say, we want a women's professional hockey league, and we'll, I don't know if funding it is the right word, but we'll find people or sponsors or whatever so that you can keep playing. And I don't think it's the caliber of player is excellent, but they weren't drawing enough people, I presume. So they need the NHL to step in and say, we think this is important and we're going to fund it in some sort of way and make sure that the players get paid and we develop women's hockey. And there's women making the Hockey Hall of Fame now, and there should be more of them in there. And if that is, you know, that's a whole Hockey Hall of Fame, it's just not the NHL. And it's very important. And the NHL, they make lots of money. This is not a, you know, they can fund a women's professional hockey league for sure. And it's right now they're sort of, I wouldn't say they're waffling, but they're not exactly jumping right in the NHL and saying, oh yeah, absolutely. So, but they should be doing this.
And I think it's of a town like Edmonton. I mean, not every market is like Edmonton, where the Oilers are the game in town that by far. I mean, you know, the Edmonton Eskimos would be second, but that's a drop in the bucket in comparison to the interest in the Oilers. But, you know, I look at the Oil Kings, the other team the Oilers Entertainment Group owns and plays out of Roger Place. You know, they average, what, 6,000-7,000 people on average there. I mean, weekend games get more because there's kids and they get more people. But, you know, you're adding, you know, if let's say let's say the NHL goes ahead and does this and Edmonton gets a franchise. I don't know. I mean, we joked, I remember joking last summer about what if the Oilers were to bring their AHL farm team here? Could they make a go of it? Could they actually make a business case to have a third hockey team here that they would charge money for, and maybe if it's Rogers Place or whatever.
I don't think, if, as long as the farm team in Bakersfield still ends up drawing 5,000-6,000, they're not going to do it.
But, you know, but then you have the women's professional game. I guess it just depends on if you think you can grow interest in the game further. I know it's still hockey, but it is women playing the hockey, a different set of stars, a different set of characters away from the NHL. Because the WHL is related to the NHL. Some of those guys are going to make the jump and play pro, and they might one day play on an NHL team, including the Oilers. You know, we're not at the point here where we would see women playing in the NHL. So you're talking about a completely different, in a lot of ways, you're talking about a different product.
It's a different product, but it's still hockey and good hockey.
Yeah. And obviously Edmonton is, we think, a hockey town.
I mean,
or is it more of an Oilers town?
Put it this way. The caliber of women's hockey on these teams would probably be higher for women's, you know, these players are going to play on national teams internationally and such, than it would be for the Oil Kings, because not every player that's playing for the Oil Kings is going to be a pro. You know, there's a few, but not, they're not going to the NHL. Whereas, you know, a league, you know, in certainly sponsoring teams in Canada, there's lots of those players that are going to play either on for a U.S. National team or a Canadian. So I don't think it's, you know, it wouldn't be a drop in the bucket to most NHL, for the league as a whole, to say, like, we can fund it, we can pay for this league because we think it's important.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why does any league or any team catch interest and grow to the extent where, I mean, we can go back in history, and the NHL's got a long history, just celebrated its 100th anniversary a couple of years ago. But at one point in time, and I know Canada and the U.S. have all grown here over time, but it has to start somewhere. You have to start somewhere. I mean, who knows what, I mean, I'm not going to be alive in 100 years, but who knows what people will be, you know, passing their time with and showing interest in 100 years from now. We could all be living in a virtual reality room, for crying out loud. We don't know. But it has to start somewhere. Somebody has to actually, you know, recognize that, hey, there is a market for this game. There are people out there to reach who, you know, aren't going to watch, let's say, the NHL. Maybe this is an opportunity to grow even more. And it's just an opportunity. But somebody has to take that leap of faith, because right now, there's no women's professional hockey team selling out a hockey arena that's got 18,000 capacity. It's not happening.
It's not happening, and it doesn't happen with junior hockey either.
No,
so,
it doesn't.
The NHL likes the players they get from junior hockey. They're not paying for them when they're playing junior hockey, though. I mean, that whoever owns that team pays, and they don't pay those kids very much money. They would have to pay the salaries of these players too if they're going to, you know, run the league, unless they get sponsors, major sponsors, across the country and, you know, in the areas. And, you know, and I don't know how many centers in Canada would be applicable to having a team. Certainly, you could have a team in Edmonton if you got a team in Calgary. So,
yeah. I mean, I think about the example in the United States, where the WNBA, Women's National Basketball Association, has been around for a bunch of years now. I mean, they don't draw the same as the NBA teams do, but they exist. I don't think they're connected to the NBA. They might have been at one time. But even there, I mean, I think that things just take time, and it depends on how much attention people are paying to these sports. I mean, I know that, you know, there's a very big menu when it comes to just sports that we can consume in Edmonton, Canada, you know, a city of 1 million people, furthest north major city in Canada and on the continent for that matter. And we have, thanks to technology, access to watch all manner of sporting events. Never mind going down to Rogers Place to watch, say, the Oilers or Oil Kings live, and never mind about the football team and the new soccer team that's coming in and a basketball team. But just being able to watch things on screens, whether it's television or your phone or your computer, the whole world is open up to us and there's so much competition. I mean, you know, when it comes to trying to grow a game like, say, women's hockey, never mind the WNBA example or professional soccer of some stripe here in North America, it is a long-term game. It is not something you're going to see overnight. Just like the NHL, you know, once upon a time, Edmonton didn't have an NHL team. It didn't have a pro hockey team for a few years. I mean, before the NHL, there was the WHA. Before the WHA, there was the old Western Hockey League with the Flyers played in. I mean, everything takes time.
Like I said, the NHL's got money, got the money to do it.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's...
And yep. In terms of, you know, to be crass, it would also benefit them in terms of public relations if they did it. Mm-hmm. You know, apart from growing the game, the public relations part of it, if they did it, they would gain something from that.
And I think that's what it is. It is growing the game. I mean, the NHL makes efforts to go to China and to go to, you know, to Europe and play games in their global series in efforts to get more people to watch your game. And I think, you know, if you're trying to appeal to a different gender, if more women would watch hockey because women are playing high level hockey and getting paid for it and not just getting paid, you know, $20 a day, but getting a living wage.
Like if they to carry it four steps too far, probably, but if we ever get around to the NHL using, you know, women as either referees or lines, you know, working the lines in the, they're going to need some place for them to find these players. They would be finding them off, you know, professional hockey teams. So eventually there's going to be, you know, women working in the NHL, I think is, you know, working the lines for sure. And they got to find those people somewhere, and they would be playing pro hockey on one of these teams in Canada.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.